Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. It's 1 week before Christmas, and if you're like me, there's still plenty of shopping to get done before the big day. But never fear, Nancy Pearl, our book reviewer, is here and has a number of suggestions for the serious reader on your list, or perhaps just an extra stocking stuffer. Nancy Pearl is known as America's Librarian and is the author of the Book Lust series of books of recommended reading. Nancy has received lots of honors over the years for her work promoting reading, but her latest is quite unusual. She's just back from Oslo, Norway, where the National Library of Norway has just named their artificial intelligence machine learning library tool, the Nancy. Perhaps she's now Norway's librarian. She joins us today with a list of books perfect for the reader on your holiday gift list, or perhaps just to treat yourself during the holidays. Nancy Pearl, welcome back to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Oh, thank you, Rich. Love to be talking to you.
You've got a great list of books for the holiday gift giving, and some of them will be very familiar names, others perhaps not so familiar. But the first book on the list will be familiar to most Oklahomans if they haven't already read it, and that would be Sam Anderson's Boomtown.
Yeah, I loved this story of Oklahoma City, and I think that Sam Anderson, you know, this began as an essay for the New York Times Magazine on the Oklahoma City Thunder. And, of course, I'm from Seattle now, and we have a lot of resentment toward Oklahoma City because they stole the Seattle Supersonics from us. So, you know, I loved reading that article in the New York Times Magazine, and then to have them come out with a whole book about Oklahoma City from its start to the present. And I, you know, what I loved about this was seeing a city grow and the mistakes that were made in the development of Oklahoma City that led to a lot of the stuff that's happening now. Of course, he goes over the tragedy at the Alfred Murrah building and what happened there. But, you know, I sort of say to my Seattle friends, well, why, you know, they would say, well, why would I want to read a book about Oklahoma City? You know, where they've only just flown over it, if that. And I would say because it's consistently interesting and entertaining, and you just learn things. It's just one of those wonderful nonfiction books that I just couldn't put down.
Well, now, you're in addition to being a Seattlean, you're also a former Tulsan, and you know that we don't ever have anything good to say about Oklahoma City. So this must have been eye-opening in a lot of ways for you.
And this has, let me tell you, this has some great put-downs of Oklahoma City, not by the author, but things that other people have said.
Well, the name of the book is Boomtown. If you haven't read it already, it's at the top of Nancy Pearl's books for holiday gift giving. And the next book is also another one you've talked about a couple of times, but it is a great novel by Paul Auster, 4321.
Yeah, this is one of my, again, this is one of my favorite novels of 2017. It's out in paperback now, so I thought it would be one of those good stocking stuffers for those people who have a big stocking, because this is a big, big, big book. It's the story of four boys growing up into their adulthood. And the four boys all have the same name, the same parents, and it's the minute changes from one to the other so that you see how small decisions in someone's life can have big repercussions. Paul Auster is a wonderful, wonderful writer. Just one of those authors who really invites the reader into the book. And he says this in an essay. He says, I leave room for the reader. And in the end, I believe that Paul Auster says, it's me and the reader who are creating the book that you're reading. So what you do is you read all four boys, the story of 4, 3, 2, 1, their birth, their first 3 years, and then, you know, their third through 6 years, 4, 3, 2, 1, up until adulthood. Just an amazing novel, and I can't really see what he can do next. You know, sometimes you read a book that's just so fully developed that to think about the author attempting something else, I mean, I just sort of put down the book and thought, well, where can he go? This is so wonderful. And I'm a big Paul Auster fan. I mean, I think he can do practically anything that he wants to do with literature. But boy, this one is just really, really good. And it's really interesting technically, too, that you have these boys who are born exactly the same, and then how each one changes from the others based on circumstances or choice or fate or karma or whatever you want to say it is.
Paul Auster's 4321. The next book has a wonderful title. I'm not familiar with it. Maybe I should be. It's titled The Trouble with Sheep and Goats by Joanna Cannon.
Well, very few people are familiar with this book. Joanna Cannon is a British writer. This is her first novel, and it's one of those books that always makes me so excited about first novels and why I try to read as many first novels as I possibly can. This is a book where the two main characters are two girls aged about 11 or 12, and it's set in the 1970s in a small town in England, and the two girls live in a kind of cul-de-sac with their families. And what happens is it's the hottest summer on record in Britain. And one of the women in the cul-de-sac has disappeared. And no one knows what happened to her, where she is, what the story is. And these two little girls decide that they are going to find out what happened. They suspect the husband. But you have to read the book to find out what happens. You know, the problem is when I say the main characters are two girls about 11 or 12, is that people automatically assume that, oh, it's a novel that's aimed at teenagers. It's not. This is an adult novel about dealing with the past. It's about friendship. It's about trust. It's about a person's relationship with God or not. And the writing is, there are just some fabulously funny scenes in here. The girls visit the library, the public library, and, you know, I always love books that have scenes set in public libraries, and this has one of the absolute best. You know, I've been talking about this book pretty much all this year in all the talks that I give, and people have been emailing me saying, oh, they never would have discovered this book if it hadn't been for me, and they loved it. So,
well, it's twofold, because it sounds like in one case, yes, it's a young adult novel, and the other, it sounds like it might be a mystery, and because there's a mystery at its heart.
Right. There is a mystery. I would say that the obvious mystery is not the mystery that we're ultimately concerned with. Do you know what I mean?
I do.
So it's really, really a marvelous book, and she has a brand new book out called, I think, Three Things About Elsie, which I had a little bit of trouble getting into, so I put it aside, and I'm going to read it when my mood changes, which I find often happens.
What's next?
Oh, next is an amazing novel called Washington Black by a Canadian, an African-Canadian writer, S.E. Edugian. And Washington Black begins in the antebellum South on a plantation, and the main character is a young black slave named Washington Black. And so you get a sense of what slavery was like and the you know, attendant cruelties and the stuff that Washington Black and his fellow slaves live with daily. But then the book turns into an adventure novel, because the wicked owner of the plantation and the owner of Washington Black, his brother, decides that he's going to take Washington with him to be his assistant on the scientific travels. And so it's an adventure novel. It's a coming-of-age novel. It's a novel about race, but it's also a novel about life and what it means to be free. The writing is so terrific. I mean, it could have so easily gotten away from her and become something other than it was or other than she had intended it to be, but she's such a careful, controlled writer that you sort of feel like every word in the book is absolutely necessary.
That's Washington Black by S.A. Edugian.
And it's on, it should be on everybody's best of 2018.
All right. My guest today is Nancy Pearl, our book reviewer on Studio Tulsa, with some recommendation for holiday gift books. Up next is Jane Gardam's A Long Way from Verona.
So Jane Gardam became famous or well-known among readers in the United States when she published a book called Old Filth. And the filth in the title stands for, it's an acronym standing for Failed in London, Try Hong Kong. And that was the first of a quartet of books about the same characters. But I have been a fan of Jane Gardam since I was about 12 years old and read A Long Way from Verona. So A Long Way from Verona, like The Trouble with Sheep and Goats, has a pre-adolescent girl as the main character. In the libraries that I grew up in, this was a book that they kept in the YA section. It was cataloged for teens. But that's a mistake for the same reason that The Trouble with Sheep and Goats is. It's a much more, I mean, it's a, certainly appropriate for teens, but it's a much more nuanced and thoughtful book than you would ordinarily get in a teen collection. So the main character is, we meet her first when she's about 7 or 8, close to that, I think. And she wants to be a writer. And a writer comes to her elementary school. It's set during the time of the Blitz in London, World War II. And her family has moved to this small town out of the way of, they hope, out of the way of the bombing. But a writer comes to her school to talk. And she runs home at lunchtime and puts together all the writing that she's done, all her poetry and short stories, and she meets the writer. She rushes to the train station just as the writer is getting on the train and shoves all her writings to him, and she's put her name and address on the cover of the envelope that it's all in, and then she waits for a response from this writer. And finally, after months and months and months and months, the writer writes back and says, Jessica Vi, you are a writer beyond all possible doubt, which is exactly the kind of thing you want to get if you give your work to somebody else to read. So this is a book about writing and about reading and about growing up and what it was like to grow up at that time. I have to think this was her first novel, and I think it's quite autobiographical. And I think that it's how she became a writer, how Jane Gardam herself became a writer.
So this is a pretty old book, then.
It is an old book,
All right. So
yeah. But
great,
still, but
great one.
Just reissued, I have to say, just reissued recently with a beautiful new cover. All of her books, this one publishing company, has been bringing out all her books with just great new covers for new American readers.
Okay, that's Jane Gardam's A Long Way from Verona. Up next is Sarah Grand's Claire DeWitt and the City of the Dead.
Oh, my gosh. This is a mystery for people who feel like they've read every mystery and there's nothing in the genre that can get them excited about.
There's nothing new. There's
nothing new under the sun of the mystery. Claire DeWitt is... there are three books. This is the first one. The third, this one came out a couple years ago. The third one is just out. But I would advise reading them in order because then you get the whole, in a way, they're one novel and you get the whole story. But this is an existential mystery where the main question that the detective Claire DeWitt is dealing with is, what are we doing here? What, you know, who are we? How are we to live? And yet they're mysteries as well. I mean, conventional mysteries as well. But it all goes back to a book that Claire finds. She and her two friends find this book, a memoir by the most famous detective in the world and a French detective. And they base their detection on his methods, which go far beyond DNA and things like that. I mean, they're much more cerebral. I loved this book. I loved all three of the books. And it's funny, I loved them so much. I had never read anything by the writer. Oh, let me say before I go on, I just want to make sure I say that the City of the Dead is New Orleans right after Katrina.
Oh, okay.
And it's a great, you know, I read a lot of books about New Orleans after Katrina, and I think this is one of the truest in the sense that you really get a sense of what it was like, particularly for the lower classes. So this is a wonderful, wonderful novel. And I have to say, it's so complex that I don't think I do a good job explaining it. So you're going to have to trust me.
All right. Sarah Grand's Claire DeWitt and the City of the Dead. And I assume it sounds like these first three books are somewhat of a trilogy.
Yes, yes. Okay. Oh, I know what I was going to say. So I tried to read other books by her, not in this series, not about Claire DeWitt. And I just didn't care for them. But I love this.
All right. Up next is Andrew Sean Greer's Less.
Oh, my goodness. This won the Pulitzer Prize, so it should not be a surprise to anybody that it's on this list. It's out in paperback. I was the chair of the fiction jury for the Pulitzers, so that's how I read this first early on. And I loved it. I thought it was one of the, well, of course, I thought it was one of the best books of 2017. And was so glad that it won the fiction award. It's a story of a writer, a failed writer, a gay man who learns that his former boyfriend is marrying someone else. He's invited to the wedding, but that's the last thing he wants to do. So what he decides to do is accept every invitation to be a faculty member, to give a speech, to do teach a course, do whatever, author in residence, that will take him out of San Francisco during the period of the wedding. And this is the story of those travels. It's funny and it's serious at the same time. It's turning 50. You know, when you're turning 50, I guess I remember way back then, and feeling that you're a failure, that you haven't succeeded in what you had always thought that you would do. And it's about time passing. And, oh, my gosh, I just loved this book so much. I have been a fan of Andrew Sean Greer's for a long time. And he wrote The Confessions of Max Tivoli, which was, I believe, the source for that movie Benjamin Button,
right,
about living backwards.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved that book when it came out, and I remember interviewing him for that book and then interviewed him again for Less. And it's called Less because, brilliantly, the character's name is Arthur Less. So as Ron Charles of the Washington Post said in his review, I think something like, we want more of Less, or, you know, something very clever.
Yeah. That's Andrew Sean Greer's Less. Well, up next is a book that many people have read, but there's a new edition out that is, I guess, worth picking up, and that is The Annotated Big Sleep by Raymond Chandler, I guess annotated by Owen Hill.
Yeah, Owen Hill and some other writers, some other authors. And Owen Hill, of course, is Stephen King's son.
Huh.
And Joe Hill, who writes mysteries and horror novels, his brother. So The Annotated Big Sleep, you know, of course, the kind of touchstone annotated book is Martin Gardner's The Annotated Alice. And, you know, when you're talking about annotated novels, then that's the one that my mind always goes to, because when you read an annotated book, what you want is added value. You know, you want to learn other things, or you want explication about things that might be in doubt, or like how the author came up with this, or is this a real place, all of those kinds of things. And The Annotated Big Sleep absolutely hits every mark that it needs to hit to be worth reading, worth buying, worth keeping, and definitely worth reading, because on every page there's these annotations that just help expand the book and expand your enjoyment of the book. I loved it.
I would think that with a topic like Raymond Chandler's work, you know, it's that noir sort of feel that
right.
Annotation would help out a great deal.
Yes, because it places it in the context. I mean, Raymond Chandler was the man who, you know, he was reacting against British all those British mystery writers of the Golden Age. And, you know, he said, let's take murder out of the teacup and put it back on the street where it belongs or something.
Right.
Something like that. So for any mystery fan, certainly any Raymond Chandler fan, this should be in your library.
And it sounds like it's a great holiday gift
totally.
Recommendation for a reader that loves that kind of gritty mystery writing. And my guest today is Nancy Pearl, our longtime book reviewer here on Studio Tulsa. Up next is Emma Hooper's Our Homesick Songs.
So this is Emma Hooper's second novel. She's another Canadian. So her first book was Etta and Otto and Russell and James, which was quite popular, a good book for book groups. And I was very excited to have the second book come out, Our Homesick Songs. So the first book was set in the Canadian prairies. This one is set in Newfoundland. And it's the story of a family, father, mother, older sister, younger brother, and what happens to the family when the fishing industry goes away in Newfoundland and how the family copes. The writing is, again, just the kind of writing that you read it and you think, oh my gosh, how did she think to put those words together to come up with that idea, that sentence, that phrase? It's a beautifully done book, a book about, I mean, just the different ways that the different members of the family try to deal with this change that's going to destroy the life they all knew. And what happens is amazing. It's a wonderful book.
And that's unfortunately a too true story in a lot of different places, whether it's the hills of West Virginia
yep.
or rural Washington and Oregon, where
yep.
timber is no longer the king. It just has a devastating effect on the community and the people.
Yes, absolutely. And another thing that this book did for me was make me want to go to Newfoundland. you know, I just wanted to get on a plane and go there and see what it was like.
All right.
She makes it so interesting.
That's Emma Hooper's Our Homesick Songs. And one thing I'm noticing, we're seeing a lot of novels this year on your list. This must have been a good year for novels.
For me, it was a good year for novels.
All right. Up next is Lydia Kiesling's The Golden State.
So The Golden State is Lydia Kiesling's first novel. She's in her 30s, I believe, pretty young. And it's the story of a single mom. Well, she's single because her husband is Turkish. He went back to Turkey to visit his family, and because of the immigration and a snafu, he can't get back in the United States. And they have a toddler, 18 months old, named Honey. And so, you know, here's this young woman trying to work, trying to be a good mother, and she just, you know, not knowing when her husband or if her husband is even going to come back to the United States or if she's going to have to move to Turkey to be with him. And then she decides what she's going to do is sort of play hooky from her job and drive up from the San Francisco area up to high desert California, where her grandparents owned a trailer and where she and her mother where her mother raised her, basically, in that place. It's been a long time since I had a toddler, but I still could identify with the feelings that the woman in this novel feels when, you know, that sort of overwhelming sense that you have that you love this child more than anything and you would protect this child more than anything. And at the same time, they're driving you absolutely bonkers. And you would do anything to just get away from them. And that kind of tension is part of this book. This is not a book for someone who really wants a lot of plot at all, but mm-hmm. it's a book for people who love great writing and really well-developed characters.
All right, that's Lydia Kiesling's The Golden State. We have time for just one more book. Nancy, what would that
be? Okay, well, I definitely have to do Susan Orlean's The Library book. because it's nonfiction and it's about libraries. So Susan Orlean, probably her most famous book is The Orchid Thief, which was made into the film adaptation. Orchid Thief is a wonderful nonfiction book, if someone out there hasn't read it. The library book is another one of her great nonfiction books. It's the story of, the hook in the book is that there was a fire at the Los Angeles Public Library that destroyed a lot of the collection and really caused it to be rebuilt into the library it is today, which is a pretty wonderful library in downtown Los Angeles. But with that fire as the kind of central focus, what she does is talk about the history of that particular library and the history of libraries generally, and especially in the Los Angeles library, the various characters who, and I use that word advisedly, who were the directors of the library. You know, what Susan Orlean does, I mean, she can make, I would say, any subject interesting. There are not a lot of people who could do that. John McPhee, I think, can do that. Adam Gopnik can do that. Susan Orlean can do that. I mean, one of her other books was about Rin Tin Tin. Right. And she's just a master of that. I mean, you think, oh, I wouldn't be interested in the history of libraries or of this particular library, but in fact, it's hard to put the book down because it's so interesting.
All right. That's Susan Orlean, The Library Book. A whole list of the books we talked about will be on our website. And it sounds like it was a good year of reading.
Well, yes and no. I mean, this is a whole year of reading and partly back from 2017. So I have to say that this was a year for me that it was hard to find. I couldn't find a lot to read,
well,
a lot that kept my interest.
All right. Well,
but here we are.
Yeah, there we go. Well, Nancy, thanks very much and happy holidays to you. And thanks for joining us.
Oh, you're very welcome. Happy holidays to you.
Nancy Pearl is our book reviewer here on Studio Tulsa with a list of books for the serious reader on your gift list or perhaps just for yourself. For a complete list of the titles we discussed today, go to our website at publicradiotulsa.org and look for the Studio Tulsa tab. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.